Fancy a game?
We don't want your fancy life-changing career starting moving out of my parents' house college education.
Oh, man.
What?
How embarrassing was that for us?
Oh, my God, was it embarrassing.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, off-season. Mike Grimala is in studio from the Las Vegas Sun. Jared Justice is not here. He is apparently allowed to take vacations. Clay Baker has stuck around. We've held him hostage inside the studio after doing the press box. So Clay's here. This time on purpose. The last time Clay was here, it was not on purpose. It was Jared Justice oversleeping. But Jared's not here. He won't be here Monday either. Mike is here. We'll get to a little bit of Raider, little Golden Knights as well. But mostly UNLV. That's what Mike covers. They lose to San Diego State in the quarterfinals of the Mountain West Tournament. They end their season with 17 wins. What's next, Mike? What's next for UNLV basketball?
That's the question. What's next is Marvin Menzies meets with Desiree Reed-Francois, and he makes his pitch to stay for another year or finish out his contract, and she comes out with her decision and what she's going to do next.
So she has said, she said it about Tony Sanchez, she said about Marvin Menzies, a holistic look at the program at the end of the year. How much does it matter what Marvin Menzies pitches to her? Like, how much do you think Desiree Reed-Francois has her mind made up and it's more of just a courtesy meeting versus, hey, you know, I'm undecided, sell me on keeping you?
If things are running the way they should be, and if she's doing her job the right way, the decision should already be made, and whatever comes next should already be in line. Like, if she wants to keep Marvin Menzies for another year, it's because she already knows the benefits of that. And she knows what's out there as potential replacements. If she wants to make a move, it's also because she knows who's available, and she's already got that guy signing a contract to be the coach. The fans sort of are reactionary. Like, when they lose to San Diego State in the first round, they can get apoplectic, and they can go scorched earth, and this is it. It's over. It's got to be. But Desiree Reed-Francois can't be like that. She's got to have this decision made out in a calculated manner. She can't be a prisoner of the moment. She can't be beholden to you know, which way the wind is blowing, right? And what happened in the last game? Like,
no,
one
I hope,
game is
I hope
not
she's
making
checking
her difference.
Twitter notifications, and that's how she's making her decision.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it kind of felt under the last administration. Like,
how great would it be
end
if Desiree Francois put up a Twitter poll of, should I fire Marvin Menzies, yes or no?
I would like to see the options. It wouldn't be yes or no. You got to give me, like, more options than yes or no. But, yeah, it's like it's... So Marvin, they'll have the meeting. It should be a cursory meeting where Menzies... the only thing that maybe could change is if, you know, Menzies has something... in his back pocket. You know how Dave Rice went in one time and, you know, hey, I've got Steven Zimmerman has silently committed and or something like that, just to use an example, not the exact case. But if Marvin Menzies
Cole
were to say,
Anthony
hey,
is
we've
coming
got,
to UNLV.
We've got some five-star recruit that wants to come here and he's ready to commit. Or, hey, I've got you know, something like that lined up that she doesn't know about already. But I assume she has the full picture and her decision is made.
So you would hope that's the case, and when you say full decision, you mentioned it. If she's going to fire Marvin Menzies, she has to already know who the next coach is. Like, the worst possible thing she could do is fire Marvin Menzies and then announce they're having a national
search
for a coach.
There should be no search firm involved.
Like, I mean,
we should not
I guess
hear
she
any
could,
of that.
I guess she could fire Menzies and say, we will conduct a national search and just do that as cover.
Yes.
But actually have the coach ready
yes.
to go. But if they actually fire Menzies and then go through a process of a coaching search, that's the worst possible thing that can happen.
That's a huge black mark against Desiree Reed-Francois if that happens. Like, that's just shows a level of unpreparedness. I don't think that's going to happen. She strikes me as someone who's been very organized and pretty meticulous in her planning to this point. That would be the worst case scenario, because that just... You're throwing your hands up again. Like, that's what it means. Like, if you were to announce that Menzies, if you come out and fire Marvin Menzies today, and then Saturday comes and goes without an announcement on the next guy, and then Sunday comes and goes, and then you're into next week, that means that they don't know. They're throwing their hands up. They're panicking. We had something, or we thought we did, and it fell through, and now we're scrambling to get whatever we can. That would be the worst case scenario.
Do you think Marvin Menzies is convinced he'll be back?
I think that he believes he will be, just because I believe he has gotten assurances. Maybe not recently, but probably before the season or at some point during his tenure or after Desiree Reed-Francois was hired, at some point he was told, like, you're going to get up until the final year of your contract. We know it's a rebuilding process.
Two more years.
Well, no, I mean, you coaches are usually let go retained with 1 year left in the contract. He's got 2 years left. So you usually give a coach up until that final year, and then before the final year, you make your decision on him to keep it, to extend or cut bait. So I think he probably thinks he's got until that heading into the final year. At some point, they told him, we know it's a rebuilding process. We're going to give you the 4 full years, and he's still going off of that, and he probably hasn't heard otherwise from Desiree. So that's probably how he's been operating.
Do you think at all that the program would be set back if they made a coaching change? Like, obviously, it wouldn't be to the degree when Marvin Menzies took over, but, like,
would people leave? Would players leave?
Yeah, like, would players leave, and then you're having to, you know, jump in late on the recruiting cycle? Like, if you make a change, I think there's a chance next year's program is worse.
Well, yeah, it's something you have to weigh. Like, transfers in college basketball are, quote-unquote, an epidemic, according to some people. Like, there's so many transfers, right? Every year, teams lose everyone. How many transfers has Marvin Menzies lost? Like, he's... That first year,
Troy
he lost,
Baxter.
You know, Poyser, Baxter. I mean, he's... The core guys that he's recruited, like, he's kept most of them. Like, the last two off seasons, we have not seen a lot of movement. Brandon McCoy went to the NBA. Anthony Smith was kicked off the team. They pretty much keep most of their guys. They've been pretty loyal to Menzies through the rebuilding process. If he were to leave, I got to think that there would be some movement. Like, some of those guys would leave. Justin would be the most obvious candidate who could leave and play right away. But, yeah, you would probably see some players leave. And then the next coach in would have to fill in. And you'd have to – it would depend on the coach. Like, just how good of a coach are you and how good of a recruiter are you? Can you build this thing in 1 year?
It's – the decision's a long-term decision. Like, it's not a what is next, what's better for next year. Like, the decision is, if you're Desiree Francois, the decision is, do you believe in Marvin Menzies, you know, rebuilding process and that he's going to get this where he wants it to be, or do you not believe it and you have somebody that you believe in more?
If you fire Marvin Menzies now, you gave him 2 years, basically, to see what he could do. You bring in a Thad Matta. He comes in with 1 year, his first year, so, you know, patching the pieces together. Have you set a precedent that you're now a 2 year decision, like, you make your decision on your coaches in 2 years? That's
yes.
A dangerous precedent to set. Like, how many coaches are going to want to jump in on that without huge guaranteed money if you tell them, like, hey, Thad Matta, you can have this job, but if you don't go to the NCAAs in year one or year two, it's hot. If you don't make it in year one, you're on the hot seat. If you don't make it in year two, it's coaching search time. That's what happened to Menzies in this scenario. Does UNLV want to be that school that is just, you know, 2 years is what you get, and then we're just churning through coaches at that point and constantly rebuilding and tearing down, and then you're into that Cleveland Browns kind of limbo where you just have no continuity and everything's changing and the front office is changing and your philosophy is changing every 2 years? That's something you have to weigh against. I mean, if you can get a home run coach to put an end to that cycle, then I guess, yeah, go do that, but... You know, you don't know beforehand that the coach is going to be that good.
That's the other part of firing Marvin Menzies. I don't think you fire Menzies based on his on-court performance this year. Like, it was the most average season you could possibly have. They literally did not beat any of the good teams in the Mountain West, and they lost Air Force, but they lost one of their 12 games to the bad teams. Like, it's not good, but it's not bad. Like, it's the most average season you could possibly
have. You can't throw a parade for that season, but you also can't kill the coach.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years ago, you won 4 conference games.
So if you do, like, you don't fire Marvin Menzies for the sake of firing Marvin Menzies. You fire Marvin Menzies because Desiree Francois believes she has, like, the next great coach.
Yeah.
It's
got to be a super upgrade. A guy that you think is going to come in and win 25 games next year and get you to the NCAA tournament next year. Like, that's what the move would be.
So the one exception I will say to the you don't fire Menzies for the sake of Menzies, for firing him, is the attendance. Like, I don't know exactly how much that is hurting them, because basketball is the program that makes money for the UNLV athletic department, and Thomas and Mac has been empty. So, like, if that is truly killing them, like that can be something that you point to and say, yes, we had to make a move, but at the same time,
no one is going to pay to come watch a coach. Yeah, with one exception.
Patino's the
Rick
one
Pitino,
name,
and he would fill it up maybe for the first year. I mean, we all think he would win, but for that first year, regardless of record, I feel like there would be a buzz and they get people in there. But Thad Matta, I mean, great coach, not going to fill up the arena just based on name recognition. Yeah.
You'll get some early intrigue, and then it's going to be, okay, he's 3-1 start the season, he's 7-0, we'll show up.
If they make a move, the next coach, absolutely, the one thing they cannot say is the word build or rebuild. Like, because if they bring in a new coach, that's over. Like, they're not bringing you into rebuild. They're bringing you in to win 25 games and go to the NCAA tournament and be a top 25 team. That's what the next coach has to do in year one in order to sort of justify the move and to keep himself off the hot seat. That's a tricky spot for a coach to walk into. Like, you're coming in, and if you don't do that, if you don't win the Mountain West in your first year and go to the NCAAs, you're going to be on the hot seat in year two. That's crazy.
You almost have to bring in the Eric Musselman type, where you come in, you bring in grad transfers, and you try to compete right away, and there's, you know, it's not really a long-term plan. It's a, yeah, we're doing this to win in year one, and then we'll try to get things going.
You know who's got a pretty good track record of doing that is Thad Matta, actually. He took over a pretty good Butler team, and he took them to the tournament in his first year, and he took over a good Xavier team in his first year, and he took them, you know, 26 wins right to the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, it can be done. It's not like an impossible ask, but it's just a weird spot where if you're letting go of your current coach, your next coach has to come in and win right away, or he's right back on the hot seat and, you know, threatened to be out in 2 years with the, you know, exactly the same spot as the old coach.
Did you enjoy San Diego State fans chanting, "This is our house," yesterday?
I didn't hear it. Was that at the end of the game?
You didn't hear it? Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't.
Last minute or so.
I don't pay attention to the crowd unless it's like something out of the ordinary.
You're
like,
useless sometimes, Mike.
And those crowds are not overwhelming at the Mountain West tournament. It's like a small section of fans
In front of them. There are more San Diego State fans than UNLV fans. Yeah. Or at least they were louder. I don't know about more, but
they
were louder.
Win the game.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, it's I didn't hear that particular chant, but yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they're stating a fact.
Well, so you had them chanting, "This is our house." Brian Dutcher, after the game, opened up by thanking his fans for being great. Jeremy Hemsley said it feels like a home atmosphere when they play in the Thomas and Mack. So, like, San Diego State's come to the Mountain West tournament, and they've beaten UNLV, I think it is 7 straight times now in the Mountain West tournament. And UNLV hasn't beaten them in this tournament since 2003. Like, San Diego State always ends UNLV's season.
4 of the last 6 seasons, San Diego State has beaten UNLV 3 times and ended their season in the Mountain West tournament.
They've got, what you call it, what, the super sweep?
The super sweep.
What broom emoji is that?
Man, I would have to look. But yeah, that's...
Why do people hate your broom emojis?
They feel like it's... Like I'm celebrating... Like when I say UNLV has swept 5 opponents this year and then you put a little broom in there, they think I'm like...
You're editorializing?
Yeah, they think I'm celebrating the sweeps. Like I'm sitting there jumping up and down that UNLV swept Boise State or something.
You are.
It's hard
for you to get the tweet off because you're so excited.
Yeah, my hands are shaking. I'm so excited. After UNLV wins games, believe me, I'm so excited.
You are actually excited to send the broom tweets out just because you know
the response is coming. The second one, yeah, I was excited. Before the game, I told Steve Colfield, the sideline reporter, I was like, man, if they win, I'm going to send out a broom emoji so fast. But yeah, it's not.
Steve Colfield the sideline reporter now? He's not the host of Colfield and Company anymore.
He's both. But in the context of that story, I didn't tell. He was at the game because he was the sideline reporter.
He was the sideline reporter in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the super sweep. I don't know what emoji that would be. I feel like it's mostly old people who have a problem with that because they don't understand the way that emojis work.
They don't.
They can be positive or negative. You can use an emoji negatively as well. So I don't think people just don't grasp how it works.
You got to get is there a bigger broom emoji? I don't know that there is.
I'll have to update my phone.
You will.
I'm still like 2 updates behind.
Jesus, Mike Grimala. Get it together. One last question. There's a lot of, if Marvin Menzies is back, I'm not showing up next year. Is that a real threat or are those the people that are already not showing up?
I feel like those are people who are already not showing up. Like, you and I cover every home game. We see the 3,000 people that are in the building. Like, they're not, you know, I don't see them staging some active protest where they're going to actively, like, rip up their tickets and walk away from the game. Like, the people that are there just like watching basketball at this point, right? And if there's a big game, they'll come out and you may see a little bit more. But the people that are there are kind of just like UNLV, and they roll with the ups and the downs, and they just sort of, it's what they like to do on a Wednesday night is go out and watch a basketball game, which is a sad statement for UNLV that those are the only kind of fans you have left. But I don't see a big, I hesitate to say it can't get any worse, because it probably can get worse attendance-wise, but I think you're pretty close to the bare-bones, die-hard contingent that are out there at the games now. I'm not sure how many of those people are going to walk away in anger if you keep Marvin Menzies for one more year.
Mike Grimala is going to tell everybody why the Patriots are superior to the rest of the NFL. That's what you're going to do next. I just assume that's what you're going
to do. That's my favorite pastime.
Technically Correct is brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Make sure you have the Be Connected Sports app downloaded. It is the easy-to-use app that lets you bet before an in-game. While you watch, it's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. Want the easiest way to bet on sports in Las Vegas? Download the Be Connected Sports app for free from the Apple or Google Play stores. Then head to your favorite Boyd location like the Orleans, Gold Coast, or Sun Coast to create an account. And with just a $100 deposit, you'll get a free $50 to wager. Then you'll be able to bet before or during the games you love to watch. Plus, if you use Pay Near Me, depositing money into your account can be done at 7-Elevens, Family Dollar Stores, or CVS Pharmacy. It's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Welcome inside the briefs, Clay.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here with you and Mike inside your briefs. This is a special moment for me. Should we get it started?
It is. We should get it started.
You know, we should get it started. But before we do that, you know, that perfect package that you're selling there, I tell you what, I love the sound of that ceramic blade thing, because that's the part that always worries me the most.
Look at Clay. You got all the verbs down, all the words down perfectly from that read. You'll get the read in a little bit.
It's so well enunciated that I couldn't help it. I mean, I just fell right in love with it. But, yeah, I was doing a little project over the weekend, and I was like, you know what? Tyler has something here, because what I'm working with and I'm plugging into the wall is absolutely dangerous to put anywhere near my body.
Manscaped.com. It'll fix you up right away, Clay.
Thanks, Tyler. All right. To the briefs. The first 2 years of Trent Brown's salary with the Raiders are guaranteed.
So the last 2 years are not. Mike Grimal is a Patriots fan here. Am I going to ask you to break down left tackle play?
You want the scouting report on Trent Brown?
Do you have a scouting report on a one-year left tackle for the Patriots?
I do. Quarterback, get rid of the ball very quickly and take a short drop. He's a huge guy, and if you ever watch Tom Brady play, he drops back. His drops are the shortest in the league. I mean, he's standing right behind the center when he throws the ball most of the time. And Trent Brown, you force the rusher to the outside, and you just push him around the quarterback. Even when you get beat, you just push him around the edge, and Tom Brady's usually got rid of the ball before he gets there. So if you do that, you'll be fine. And Derek Carr usually gets rid of the ball pretty quickly, so maybe you'll be okay.
Is Trent Brown good enough to force his way into left tackle? Because I don't know if you're aware, they drafted Colton Miller in the first round.
To be a left tackle, now they're going to move him to the right side.
We've got conflicting reports. Adam Schefter said they're moving Colton Miller to right tackle. Vic Tafer of The Athletic said they're moving Trent Brown to right tackle.
I don't feel like Trent Brown is that elite that he's going to...
It matters that much.
Yeah, that he's not going to just be so dominant at left tackle that he's going to move people around and you build the line around him. The Patriots made him look really good. He's a great run blocker. I mean, he's a fit at right tackle. He can block in the running game, but as a tackle, as a pass protector, you do have to tailor your passing game to be, like I said, short drops, quick throws. If you're dropping back seven steps and going through progressions, he's going to get beat around the edge a lot, and it's going to cause problems.
My favorite thing from Mike was after Trent Brown signed with the Raiders was you texting me saying Trent Brown's going to re-sign with the Patriots after 2 years.
Yeah, once that guaranteed money is done and they cut him, right back to the Patriots.
You truly believe Bill Belichick handles free agency better than anybody else.
Yeah, you don't give Trent Brown $30 million of guaranteed money. You trade a fifth-round pick for the next Trent Brown, and you make him look good for a year, and then... That's how you do it.
How many offensive linemen have been Patriots and then left for two years
in a row? Their left tackle has left in free agency, become the highest paid offensive lineman in league history, and then underperformed with their new team without Tom Brady. But like, it's easy to block for Tom Brady. He makes it look easy. That's the issue for other teams.
Is it Tom Brady?
It's Tom Brady and the coaching. Okay. If you have one of those two, then maybe you'll be all right with Trent Brown as the highest paid offensive lineman.
That is way too much Patriots love.
The Raiders have released backup quarterback A.J. McCarron.
It's Nathan Peterman time. Nathan Peterman is going to be the backup quarterback, which is exciting.
But he's probably not, because John Gruden is the coach, and he's known for one thing. He's going to churn through like 8 more quarterbacks before the start of the season. Because like now it's Nathan Peterman, but 3 weeks from now it's going to be Josh Johnson or someone like that again.
Derek Carr hopes it's Nathan Peterman, because then he doesn't have to look over his shoulder at all.
With John Gruden, you always have to look over your shoulder as the quarterback. Even if you're like the entrenched 4-year starter like Derek Carr is, former MVP candidate, like if you have a couple bad weeks and John Gruden looks over to the practice field and says, hey, that number 2 guy's throwing the ball pretty well, like he's going to get a shot. They're going to get a shot at some point.
They didn't play McCarron at all last year, though. I think he played 2 snaps and both of them were to take a knee. And it's just like they played so many blowout games too, and he didn't play him at all. The cap space thing with A.J. McCarron, that's what it's about. They save $5 million against the cap, and the Raiders have spent a bunch of money, so they need more cap space. So $5 million for A.J. McCarron to not be your backup quarterback, it's worth it.
In an unrelated move, the Raiders have also released wide receiver Jordy Nelson.
That was a fun, 36 hours where he was the number 3 wide receiver? And now he's gone because they got Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams. My hope is that means they're still in the mix for drafting a wide receiver in the first or second round.
You have to be. If you're paying that much money to the free agent wide receivers, you have to bring in like the next group behind them. Like Antonio Brown is, 31 going into this season? So he's got 1-2 years left where you can expect that kind of like superstar production. And he's already into that injury nexus for like skill position players. Is he going to play 16 games every year from here on out? Probably not. Got to keep drafting guys. Like that's what the NFL is. Even at your strongest positions, you just have to keep drafting that position over and over again because the careers are so short.
Would Bill Belichick have given Jordy Nelson his 2019 roster bonus in December of 2018, only to then release him a few months later?
No.
Because that's what the Raiders did. They gave Jordy Nelson, I think it was $3.6 million in December.
It's probably not. They wouldn't have given him the contract. And they don't pay skill positions that much, and wide receivers especially. Like I think all 3 of those Raiders receivers, Nelson, Williams, and Brown, make more than like any receiver on the Patriots. Each one of them probably makes more than the Patriots' entire receiving core makes in guaranteed money. They don't pay that position.
Isn't Brandon Bolden coming back as a running back for the Patriots?
He is. One of my least favorite players.
Oh, you don't like Brandon Bolden?
No.
Why not?
Not a fan. He's a special teams player who also gets 2 carries a week that will completely annoy me while I watch the game.
What is your least favorite part about the Patriots last year? Cordarrelle Patterson getting carries?
That was an issue. Cordarrelle Patterson. I don't like when they give... My biggest problem for 10 years watching the Patriots was jumbo formation. We get in the goal line or short yardage. Here come the 2 tight ends. Here comes the fullback. I hated it. Always got stuffed. And Bill Belichick, he rammed it down my throat in the end because that's how they won the Super Bowl. They turned into a power team and they just ran jumbo all the time and that's how they won. So even the things I get annoyed about eventually come back to bite me in the end. So I was wrong about that, and Bill was right.
Such a tough life for a Patriots fan.
But don't you see that he might be that ideal Patriot, though? Like, Jordy Nelson could go and like just be that guy, like the X or Z receiver for Tom Brady?
Yes, we need that receiver on the outside who can win outside the hash marks. Jordy Nelson's a big guy. Already speculation is already cooking that Jordy Nelson could be going to the Patriots. Now that he's not getting that guaranteed money, we can sign him for cheap.
Our hot takes. The Golden Knights, they're going to take on the Dallas Stars tonight. They drop the puck 5 p.m.
I love having Mike on and making him talk hockey, because the last time you were here, we talked about Mark Stone, and you were, in fairness, you were sort of anti-George McPhee, anti the deal, because you don't give up young players for superstars. Mm-hmm. And I was pro the deal, but everybody hated you for it.
Yeah,
like the only comments I got were, please don't let Mike talk hockey anymore.
But they've won since they made the trade. Like, yes. What, they went 5 in a row.
Yeah, they've been good.
So if you go on to win the Stanley Cup this year, that's a good trade.
Yeah, is that the only
yeah
factor? Even though he signed for 8, what if they win one in the next 8 years?
That's still a lot to give up
for one Stanley
it's
Cup.
Still a lot to give up. I don't think they made the trade to win 8 years from now. They made the trade to win now.
Do you have any other hockey takes that can make me look smarter?
I only have the one hockey take. Oh. You already know it.
Wait, what is it?
It's that they have a goalie who is the most important player on their team, and he's old, and he was old at the end of last year, and that's why they lost in the Stanley Cup Finals. And now they play him more than any other goalie in the league. They don't rest him at all.
Played the most minutes in Subban.
Did they not see how old and slow he was at the end of last season?
No, they just remember how good he was before that. That's all. That's all that matters. All right. So I need to change my opinion to don't rest Fleury? Is that what you're telling me now? I have to go opposite of you is what has to happen.
Then, yeah, because, I mean, they have to rest. He should play the least minutes of, like, any starting goalie in the league. Save
Wear
him for the
Fleury
postseason.
Out. Subban's no good.
Las Vegas now has the 8th best odds to land the next MLS expansion franchise.
That is according to Bet Online. Always reputable. Bet Online. 16-1. So Major League Soccer, they're going to 26 teams in 2020. They might be going to 32 teams in the future. So conceivably there would be 6 more spots that would be open.
And they want franchises to have their own soccer-only stadiums. That's like one of their stipulations,
yes,
or that's one of their preferences.
A good stadium situation. You can convince them of something else. But yes.
Las Vegas had a soccer-only stadium on the docket that was defeated.
Yes.
Recently.
Yes.
They were going to build a stadium downtown, and that didn't go through.
Cashman is now soccer-only.
Does that count?
No, not yet.
It's a refurbished baseball stadium.
They have to change Cashman. Like, for this to be a reality, Cashman has to be better. Yeah. Like, and they can. It's just a matter of how much money they have to put into it. The Las Vegas Lights, anyways.
Who are the cities ahead of Las Vegas on that list?
So Sacramento, who is most people almost think is guaranteed to get one. St. Louis, Phoenix, Detroit, Charlotte, Indianapolis, and Tampa.
Okay. I mean,
I don't think it's that hard to see Vegas jumping ahead. Like, if MLS goes to 32 and there's 6 more spots, you just have to jump ahead of 2 of those cities. That's not that difficult to do.
I'm just worried about flooding the pro sports market in Vegas before we get an NBA team.
Yeah, what's
if
the
we want the NBA team next.
This
and then
happen.
We can worry about MLS.
What year is it? It's 20. This isn't going to happen for like 5 years.
Okay.
You're good. You just get the NBA team here in the next 5 years, you'll be good. You're worried about the NBA surviving because there's an MLS team here?
No, but the discretionary dollar only goes so far. We already see UNLV getting squeezed out.
They'll just squeeze out the things. The NBA will be the second biggest thing here.
Okay. I'm also worried about the Aviators.
About them what? That they're going to die?
It's a minor league team. Being a minor league team in a minor league town can work, but being a minor league team in a major league town...
It's tough.
That's tough sledding.
Yesterday, San Diego State shot 29.8% to defeat UNLV.
Not going to spend a whole lot of time on the actual game yesterday, but UNLV... I thought it was one of their better defensive performances of the season. I thought Colorado State in the regular season was, too. They held San Diego State under 1 point per possession. The only real problem was they fouled a lot. San Diego State went to the free throw line 32 times. But San Diego State only had 9 layup and dunk attempts. I think defensively they got better at the very end of the season, but it didn't actually result in anything tangible because the offense was so bad.
Yeah, it's sort of a double-edged thing where they played defense against San Diego State pretty well. Obviously, they held them under 30%. They just weren't able to defend McDaniels. Like, they couldn't. He was taking bad shots and making them, and like that's
how he went for 30 in the first matchup. He didn't really get great shots in any of the games against UNLV. He's a mid-range shooter, and when he knocks them down, you can't guard him.
Yeah, I guess that's what stars do. Like, even when you force them into taking bad shots, they just make them and beat you with them.
He's sort of like the Martin twins, where UNLV just, you cannot stop him from getting a shot off. The problem is the Martin twins usually shoot threes and dunks. He takes a bunch of mid-range shots.
Is that the biggest indictment on Menzies so far, is that he hasn't been able to get that guy? Like that player that can do that to other teams?
I mean, Joel Tomboy takes those shots. He just doesn't make those shots very often. He takes those pull-up 15-footers like McDaniels. But yeah, I mean, he's relied on Jordan Johnson, Jovan Moring, and Amori Hardy, and Noah Robotham as his guards to go get shots, and all of those guys are 6'2 or smaller.
It seems like they just haven't had someone who can go outside the system when they have to, and I'm going to hang 30 points on you even if you defend me well, and even when no one else can make a shot, I'm going to score 25 and win this game.
Rebel Bryce Hamilton played 7 minutes in the Mountain West tournament.
This is only to trigger Mike, who is the leader of the Bryce Hamilton Needs to Play Club. Fun stat for you. Over the last 4 games of the season, Bryce Hamilton played 24 whole minutes.
Menzies said he was going to trim his rotation. He was going to play the guys that he trusted in the Mountain West tournament. He was going to stick to his veterans, and he did that. The issue is now you're going into next season, and Bryce Hamilton is a huge part of your team going forward, or he should be, cornerstone. Like, you recruited him. He's supposed to be a four-star guy. We don't know what he is at this point. Like, we don't know what he can do next year. If you're putting him in the starting lineup next year, he's going to be playing major minutes for the first time, and you're going to be trying to win 25 games and win an at-large berth to the NCAA tournament, and one of your better players is someone who did not get playing time this year. So that's... He's going to be a rookie next year. That's one of the things you traded off this season. You got more minutes for Chris Clyburn, who's a veteran and who did play, you know, pretty well at the end of the year. But going into next year, Bryce Hamilton, brand new to that situation.
Every day I give you a look inside Bischoff's briefs. Have you ever wondered why it is so smooth?
Why?
Because of Manscaped.com.
Hmm.
Whenever Bischoff's briefs get hairy, the Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped.com cleans it up. Their precision-engineered tools with skin-safe ceramic blades, Clay Baker's favorite,
thank you,
help avoid painful cuts inside Bischoff's briefs. So head to Manscaped.com and use code ESPN to get 20% off and free shipping. That is code ESPN at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
Check out the podcast on LVSportsNetwork.com. Tyler Bischoff is...
dumbest smart person I have ever met in my life.
Technically correct.
Mike Gramala from the Las Vegas Sun in studio. Clay Baker filling in for Jared Justice, who I guess is on vacation. We're going to do this segment under the impression that Marvin Menzies is staying. Marvin Menzies is here next year. What's the starting lineup?
Where do you want to put Shakur Justin? It's the question, right?
What is Marvin Menzies' starting lineup? Where does Menzies want to put Justin?
If he's going to put him at power
forward. We can do our starting lineups afterwards.
Marvin Menzies is going to play Mbaka Zhang at center, Shakur Justin at power forward, and Joel Tomboy at small forward. Small ball was good for them this year. It worked. It saved their season, basically. You remember when Shakur Justin went down, they didn't go to small ball immediately. They plugged in Jonathan Chamwichachu at power forward with Mbaka Zhang, and they tried that. And then they went to small ball, and then it kind of took off, and they shot the ball well, and they won 11 games in conference. I think they go back to playing more traditional lineups next year, at least to start it off with, just because that's what Menzies knows. And it shouldn't matter the results of one game, but you see that 4 of 22 against San Diego State.
That's what's going to stick in his mind the season, the rest of the way.
Probably. Probably going to think if we had a big guy down there like a Shakur Justin who could have muscled in for a few baskets on the inside, might have changed the game. And I think that's just where he's comfortable playing. I think that's what we see to start the year anyways.
Amori Hardy, Bryce Hamilton, the leaders for the top guard spots.
Yep. Who else would it be? Like, there's Woodbury did not...
have to be one of the freshmen.
Yeah,
it's
Woodbury,
not
didn't
Woodbury.
Do it. Woodbury didn't do enough to vault over Hamilton or Hardy, obviously. So you get two freshman guards coming in, and then you've got... the guys at the end of the roster who are up in the air. So it's got to be either someone that comes in, an instant guy, instant impact transfer type, or Hamilton and Hardy.
Any chance Nick Blair starts over Tomboy at small forward?
I don't think so.
I was a little surprised we didn't actually see that move at some point because Blair's the better defender, and that's usually how Menzies makes his decisions. Like that, he seemed to feel more comfortable with Blair in big moments than Tomboy.
Maybe just Tomboy gives you more versatility. He can handle the ball. Like he can dribble around. Nick Blair can't put the ball on the floor. Tomboy's a little bit longer. He's not a better defender now, but he's probably got more potential, you know, if you play him to be a, you know, an all court type player. Question is Nick Blair still in the rotation next year? Like he's a walk on. He gave you some good minutes this year. He made some tough plays, had some good games.
I think if they go big, he is at small forward, right?
I don't know if he's got.
Who's your other option at small
forward? I don't know
forward.
If Nick Blair can put the ball on the floor well enough to play a small forward.
Well, who's
position.
Your other option though?
Tomboy, Hamilton, Woodbury, those guys. I mean, it's not the biggest lineup, but when I say they're going to stay big, I mostly mean power forward and center. Play two big men at the same time.
But I mean, like, is Nick Blair not ahead of Trey Woodbury?
I don't think they play the same position.
I mean, they don't. But of course, if I'm saying Nick Blair is going to move to small forward, which is where he played his entire career until this season. Blair's better than Trey Woodbury.
He might be, but I don't see Menzies putting him there. I don't see him playing him at the three. Like, no matter what the lineup is, like, I can't see him pushing.
You think if Blair plays,
When Nick Blair and Joel Tomboy play at the same time with a center, which they did, it was Blair at power forward, yeah. And Tomboy was playing the three. So you see Jong at center, Juicin at the power forward, Nick Blair at the three. You might see that at some point, like as a lineup, just because they try a million different combinations throughout the year, so you might see it. I can't see that being like a primary option.
So I agree with what I think Menzies will make his starting lineup. This is what I would like to see next year. Ethan Anderson be really good, and he starts at point guard. Hardy, Hamilton as your wing, Tomboy at the four, and Juicin at the five.
Yeah, I mean,
now you're counting on Ethan Anderson being a freshman and being good, but that's what I would like to see.
What if Marvin Menzies keeps the job? What I would like to see is Amori Hardy at point guard, a shooting guard and small forward who are not yet on the team. Give me a grad transfer. Give me a junior college player. Give me Braxton Huggins times two. Give me two of him, who will come in next year and score 15 plus points a game and shoot 40% from 3-point range. Give me those guys at the two and the three, ahead of Hamilton and the two freshman guards. And then give me Tomboy, Juicin, and Jong in some combination at the four and the five. So that would be the ideal situation.
So if Menzies keeps the job, do you think he has to go get a grad transfer too?
Yes.
Like he has to have significant roster.
You would have to Menzies has avoided it for, you know, both off seasons now, of pushing out the guys who are on scholarship, Georgie Slavonchinin,
Ben Coupet,
Jay Green, add Tervell Beck now. I don't think you have to push him out. Tervell Beck is probably, I would assume, going to transfer out just because he didn't play this year. There are guys that are taking up scholarships and are never going to play for UNLV. And Menzies, you know what he always pushes is the family, and I want to be in these kids' lives, you know, for the rest of their lives, even after they're done playing basketball and after they leave UNLV. So he's avoided that part of college basketball, but now it's him or them. Like, you've either got to bring in some better players or you're going to lose your job, and that's probably how that meeting is going to go. You know, if he's going to stay, there are going to have to be stipulations. Like, Desiree Rude-Francois is not going to say, hey, you're coming back. Do your thing. Yeah. It's going to be, hey, you're coming back, but we need you to, A, upgrade the schedule, B, lose some of these guys at the end of the roster, C, bring in some four-star recruits, whether it's JUCO or grad transfer who can play right away, 4, win X amount of games, 5, make it to the NCAA tournament. Like, there are going to be stipulations on coming back, and I would kind of expect that to be one of them.
And I think it's important, if Menzies is here, that he does that, because that roster, like that starting lineup we went with of what Menzies would probably start with what's coming back, it's not good enough. Like,
no.
It's probably you're getting the same type of production as you got this year. Like, you're replacing two seniors, Clyburn and Robotham, who were two of your most used guys, with Juicin, who's good, and then Hamilton.
I would say that in the perfect world, pie in the sky, best case scenario, Hardy and Hamilton have a higher ceiling than Robotham and Clyburn, right? Would you agree with that as a backcourt? They have a higher ceiling, but then you're just relying on so much internal improvement from those guys from year to year. And, I mean, it's possible. I mean, we saw Hardy take a big jump from freshman to sophomore. Could Hamilton make that same kind of jump and be your 17-point scorer next year and shoot 50% from the field and be a great offensive player and play defense? I mean, he could. Do you want to hang your entire job on that? Do you want to just risk everything on that being the lone improvement is from your guys internally? Probably not. Like, that's not the smartest thing to do. So, yeah, if you just bring back the same guys that were here last year and hope that they're going to win 10 more games, it's probably not going to happen.
I'll give you this on the roster and experience, because Menzies love to say get old and stay old. I love to pick on it. But they were a young team. KenPom tracks experience. They do it by Division I. How many years of Division I experience you have? So, like, Chris Clyburn, for example, he had one at JUCO, so that doesn't count, two at UNLV. So he counted as two coming into this year. UNLV was 228th in the country in experience this year. So very inexperienced. Their average experience per player was 1.5 years. There were four teams in the Mountain West, though, that were less experienced than UNLV.
Is that weighted by minutes?
No. He has a different minutes continuity.
Okay.
Rating as well, but just on the pure experience part, four teams had less: Utah State, San Diego State, Wyoming, and San Jose State. So two good teams, the two worst teams in the conference. But overall, if you look at the Mountain West, Nevada, Fresno State, Boise State were all top 100. inexperienced. Boise State's got a ton of juniors. They're going to be stacked with seniors next year. The rest of the conference, the other eight teams, all had 1.7 average years of experience or less. So the idea of, like, get old, stay old, this entire conference is going to be getting older.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Getting, just being a veteran team is not enough to win the Mountain West, because it's one of those conferences where everyone has veterans. Like, that's the kind of conference it is. You're not going up against teams that are stacked with one-and-dones and sophomore, you know, stars. It's not that kind of league. Like, every team you go against is usually a veteran team, right? So it's like, it's not just UNLV just becoming a team that relies on veterans is not enough in and of itself. They've got to be good veterans. They've got to be really good players. They've got, your seniors have to be better than other teams' seniors, because you're playing against seniors. Like, you're not going to get to pick off teams that are made up of all freshmen and sophomores very often in the Mountain West. It's not that kind of league. So getting old and staying old is not the entire plan. That's like step one of the plan.
We're going to get inside Mike Grimala's taste buds next.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter @Bischoff_Tyler.
This is the code that I've written for our year-to-year projections. This is building in all the intelligence that we have to project players.
Okay.
It's about getting things down to one number. Using the stats the way we read them, we'll find value in players that nobody else can see.
Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
Clay Baker running everything for us today in place of Jared. Mike Grimala in studio. Wait, Clay, do you want to talk about this wrestling thing on there? You were very excited about...
You know, unless they give us some money, I don't know if
okay,
we should.
Right.
But
we'll,
you know,
we'll ignore it until then.
Yeah, yeah, it deserves some further inspection. But something happened at a wrestling event yesterday in Las Vegas.
But Clay needs some money before he...
But we need some money to really go further with
all
this.
All right, that's a good way to do this. Clay's the business manager.
Yeah,
right, apparently.
Because we got to pair that with the manscaping, and so we'll work on that together. We'll have a portfolio tomorrow.
Seems a little terrifying. Mike Grimala is here, and it would not be a show with Mike Grimala if we did not somehow make fun of what he eats. Yesterday...
Okay.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say I haven't had any,
anything interesting.
Yeah, we
recently?
Haven't done any interesting eating stuff lately, but I guess yesterday counts. Maybe.
I mean, it wasn't that interesting, but
it
yesterday,
wasn't.
Mike and I go to eat the media meal at the Mountain West tournament, and Mike was afraid of the salad.
Well, it was pre-mixed.
And what was in the salad that you did not like?
It had other kinds of greens that I don't like. It had some vegetables mixed in. And it had already had dressing, like, spread out.
So what is Mike Grimala's salad? Mike Grimala's ultimate salad is?
Romaine lettuce, some grilled chicken, cold. Chop that up and mix it in there. And that's pretty much it. Maybe some croutons.
What about carrot bits and some red onion?
No, that's what was in it. That's what was in the pre-made thing. It was like little carrot shreds and some onion slices. And no.
Are the salads new to your diet?
They are, like in the last year. And then mostly like within the last couple months, I've been mixing in them in heavily in rotation.
Because you're trying to get healthier. And so the response is eat some leaves with
chicken. Yeah, I've hit the age where it's like my metabolism is like, if you keep eating your normal diet, which is just peanut butter sandwiches for every meal, we are not going to like that, and you're not going to fit into your clothes. So I need like something that once in a while I can throw in there into the rotation that will help me maintain my trim figure. And so
what
salads is the answer.
What if you don't eat 5 mini cupcakes? Was that the number you finished off?
6.
Six.
Well, because there were 3 different flavors.
That's right.
And I wanted to try...
You wanted to try each one. They were all good,
yeah.
So.
And they were mini, so you can't, you're not just going to have one mini cupcake of that flavor, of one vanilla mini cupcake.
So your dinner yesterday, you didn't eat the turkey, right?
No.
There was gravy on it, so that was gross?
Yeah, it didn't, the turkey just didn't look good.
The turkey, you tried it, though.
I did.
You did try
it. I had one bite of it.
You ate the mashed potatoes?
Mashed potatoes were okay.
Okay, there wasn't too much mixed in
there. No, you can't mess up a mashed potato.
I mean, you can mix flavors and stuff into it that gives it flavor.
Unless you're throwing in, like, capers or, like, onion, like, something strange. Like, as long as it's just potatoes and, right?
So your dinner yesterday was mashed potatoes.
Rolls.
Oh, that's right.
Bread
rolls. I forgot about the rolls with a whole stick of butter on each roll. And 6 cupcakes.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's why you can see why today I'm going to have a salad for lunch. Like, I can't have that meal for lunch and dinner every day for a week, you know? So it's like the salad is something I can do to to augment the rest of my diet, which is pretty terrible.
Does it really count as a salad, though? Like, I don't even like salads that much.
That's the question. I get a lot of grief on Twitter when I post the photos of the salad because people think it's just lettuce. They think
it is just like you just told us it was just lettuce and you put cold chicken.
Well, I put chicken in it now. It's like it's a chicken Caesar salad.
What is your leaf to chicken ratio?
I put in two handfuls of lettuce and then like a half breast of chicken.
Okay.
And chop it up.
I was just under the impression it might just be like a whole bunch of chicken with like a couple leaves.
No, it's the opposite, if anything. It started out being I would just eat the salad. I would just eat the romaine lettuce. And then Adam Hill from the Cofield & Company, he gave me grief because he said that that's not a salad. It's just lettuce.
So you added chicken.
I added chicken, which I know chicken salad is a real thing. I know that's a salad. And chicken is pretty healthy, and I like it. So it took me a while to get used to cold chicken. But, yeah, that's a legitimate salad. And I don't love it, but I like it enough that I can eat it.
What do we need to get you to eat over the summer? I think we need to come up with something.
Just let me do the salad first, man. It's not even fully integrated.
Get through the salad?
Yet.
You don't like the salad that much?
No, I like it. I just said I don't love it. I don't look forward to it the way I look forward to peanut butter. You know, it's not. It's different.
You don't look forward. Can you integrate peanut butter into your salad?
No.
Does that defeat the purpose of the salad?
Peanut butter is so unhealthy for you. It's like the most unhealthy thing you can eat. It's just all fat. And it's all fat and sugar.
I don't think it's the most unhealthy thing you can
eat. For me, it is.
Okay. Of the seven things that Mike Grimaldi eats.
I can't quit it. I know that.
Do we need to shut up now, Clay?
Now you got 20 seconds.
20 seconds. Uh-oh. We are rolling through. Mike Grimaldi,
like, thank God.
Of the Las Vegas Sun. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for letting us make fun of your taste buds. Clay, thank you for being a better version of Jared. We'll have a better version of Jared on what? Monday as well.
Well, as far as you know. Until we get the people from the wrestling show in here, and then we could find a hammer to replace me.
Clay Baker, Mike Grimaldi. Thanks, guys.